This week's show is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. Visit the Sassy Jacks website at sassyjackstitchery.com to sign up for the Jeanette Kirtland 1821 Stitch Along, select your favorite Nashville releases, and sign up for any of several 2025 workshops. Kim has just announced a Soiree bundle. You can register for the four remaining Sassafras Samplers Soiree Smalls Series events for a discounted fee of $230, a $25 savings. There is a firm limit of 100 students, so register soon. Sassy Jacks is also your source for the full catalog of Yvette Stanton whitework books, which are excellent. Join the Sassy Jacks Facebook page to keep up on the parade of activities available to make your stitching more fun, including the fourth Friday Zoom sessions, which are a great time. A couple of notes about this week's show, which is long. The first 35 minutes or so are about scroll frames. That's followed by almost an hour of discussion about stitch paths. That segment starts at about the 37-minute mark. For those who listen to the audio podcast, this is very much a video-oriented show. To help you, I've placed the video on the page for this show on the Fiber Talk website and created a slideshow of the stitch path images on that page so you can use them for reference. We hope you enjoy this first in a new series of shows and that you'll find it to be informative. Let us know what you think. Thanks to Kim and the folks at Sassy Jacks for sponsoring the show, and now our discussion about scroll frames and stitch paths. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Beth Ellicott. Oh.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
So three of us. This is so weird. Usually it's just two. So
yeah.
Okay. This is the first of our, I don't know how many shows are going to be in a series, of shows where we have taken questions from listeners about things they'd like us to talk about, techniques, tools, equipment, whatever it might be. And do a Sunday video rather than interview someone. So this is the first one. So we're kind of working this out on the fly. But the two topics we have today are scroll frames, what we like, what we don't like, what works, blah, 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 blah. And then stitch path. And we'll get to that. We'll spend most of the time on the stitch path and how you go about that. Because I think we all have questions of each other now as we've prepared for this. We got to learn from each other because there's things I got to see from Cindy. So so that's become more than just dissemination of information. Now we're in learning mode here. So so if you have suggestions now, the next one, at least what we've talked about, the next one will be starting and ending threads, the various techniques, when to, when not to, how best. Do we care? All those kinds of things. So that'll be the next one. But if you have other questions, setting up a project, whatever it might be, send them to me, Gary@WeTalkFiber.com. We'll put them on the list, and then we'll build these shows. We'd like to do more than just one or two because people have questions, and we have a format here where we can delve into some depth. So send those questions to us. And then also, if you want to support Fiber Talk, you can become a Patreon member, patreon.com/fibertalk. And there's a $5 level and a $10 level. And the $5 level, we've got several things, videos, and we've done a couple, and we're going to do many more coming up. The $10 level will get you access to a periodic Zoom class or Zoom gatherings of some kind, whether they're classes or just stitching sessions or what they might be. We'll get you access to that. And those will be coming up. So patreon.com/fibertalk. And something I learned today, compliments of Kim Young, Sassy Jack Stitchery, is do not subscribe through the app on your Apple phone or your iPad. Do not subscribe that way because Apple tacks on 30% when you subscribe, and that 30% goes to Tim Cook and Company, not FiberTalk. So if you want to give Tim Cook 30% of your money, you know, knock yourself out. But I don't know anyone who does. He's got enough of my money sitting around here. So do not use that app. You can go on your phone through the browser to patreon.com and subscribe that way. You can do that or on your tablet. But if you use that app, Apple will hit you 30% surcharge just for using the app. So stay away from that thing. If you have an Android phone, it will not do that. You don't get hit that charge. It's just Apple. And quite frankly, that's just pure greed there. 30% is just ridiculous. 5%, you know, 3%, 5%, yeah. But 30%, come on. So don't do that. Just go through a browser. But we'd love to have you join us. And we're going to got many, many things in the works. Every time we talk, we drum up three more things that we can do for Patreon. So subscribe there, because buckle up. In the coming months, I think we're going to have several things. Also, I never remember, please, if you're watching the video, like and subscribe. I never remember to mention this. And Cindy and Beth have both said, you know, you really need to mention this time and time again. I forget. So even right now, stop, like, subscribe.
Share.
Share please. The video. Yep.
Comment. We'd like to hear your comments. In fact, that would, if you comment and have a question, that would even work. We could pull it from the comments on underneath. That's doable.
Yep. Comments become shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or topics on a Wednesday show. So, do that. If you haven't done it, take a moment, like and subscribe. Patreon.com/FiberTalk. Just don't use those Apple apps unless you got money to just throw out into the wind. And if you do, I want to meet you. Okay, so the first topic,
you could sell them a sponsorship.
Yeah. We can put that money to actual use. Yes. All right, so scroll frames. Now, I think Beth and we were texting back and forth in preparation for this, and you said you had Millennium Frame and something else, and then a bunch of cheap ones, and that hit me, because it was how many of us who've been stitching very long can make that same statement. I got rid of mine. They were just collecting dust. They were just in the way. I literally threw them away. And because I think we all start out and buy a cheap scroll frame and then realize it doesn't stay where it's supposed to. You can't get it tight enough, blah, 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 blah. And then you start looking for better. So we all have different scroll frames. And so what do you do with your cheap ones, Beth?
Well, see, I use mine because I don't like to stitch in a hoop. It tends to get dirty that way. So anything, I normally put things on scroll rods when I'm stitching. If I'm carrying it around, then yes, I put it in a hoop and I do it in a hoop, but I don't like to do that. Hmm. I use it for about everything. So, I think this is a cheap one. I'm doing clunk. I hope they all fall down. So I'm going to do another pair.
Oh, I hope they do, just to hear the clatter. I think it'll be fun.
Great. That'd be lovely. But some of my friends, they're saying, well, you're doing the buttonhole on a scroll rod. And I said, yes. Yeah. So I've drawn my lines. You can't really see them, but there's lines drawn on here and I have to do a buttonhole stitch. So I'll keep it really loose. I'll do my buttonhole on the fabric, and then I'll do the black work. I just need something to keep it out of my hands, because I thought about putting it in a hoop, because it's, again, it's black work. It's a buttonhole. It's not that big of a stitch. So it doesn't, for me, unlike Gary, it doesn't need to be tight. So I'm going to tighten this up a little bit, and you'll see that's still probably way too loose for Gary, and it's probably not even straight. So it's kind of tight, but it's loose.
Yeah,
but
I know.
I'm mainly looking to keep it clean. Uh-huh. I'm not looking to have it drum tight, because it doesn't matter when I stitch. And I don't.
That's why I like to use a scroll frame too. I use a hoop on some of my things, but I I have some things that are on over-dyed fabrics that you can't wash.
Right.
Because the fabrics aren't color fast.
Hmm.
So, you know, I'll iron and the creases will come out because I'm careful to take the hoop off. But you're still handling it.
Yeah.
And even when you, even if you've washed your hands pretty regularly, you know, you still have oils on your fingers. So.
Right, right.
I like the scroll frame for that reason.
Unless I'm sure that it's pretty much color fast, I try not to do things in a hoop because I know they get dirty. I have a couple pieces that I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to wash these. I hope they don't run because mm-hmm. I've touched them so much. And I don't iron mm-hmm. them in between time because I think that's not so good for them either because when you put heat in, you're making that stain permanent now.
Right.
you're heat setting it is what you're doing. And I don't want to do that. But I had a friend, and I think I sent you a picture of hers. She had one of these, someone had given her a cheap pair of these, and the inside of it was...
For those who are listening, this is the standard side rods with a hole drilled in them and a groove cut out, and you wing nut it and clamp it down tight. Yeah.
Right. But the inside circle hole was very rough. She was going to have to take sandpaper into it. And then the rod part split open. And she was like, how do I do this, Beth? How do I do this? And I was like, well, you slide your fabric. And I think these are the original. I mean, these were the first ones. These aren't the ones I originally bought. I think I broke them. But you slide your fabric in here. And then that's tight, and then you put it in the sidebars, and that keeps it tight. These are my least favorite of any of them. I've kept them. I think they were just – I found them, actually, because they were at the bottom of the shelf when I was digging stuff for this one. But these are my least favorite because I really think these don't hold at all without the tape on it. I guess you could put a staple in it and staple it on there, but I – staple your fabric onto the rod, but I just don't think that would be.
How about some artist tape?
Yeah, artist tape would work. And I've done that. I've done the blue masking tape too, which isn't. If I know I'm going to do something and do it really fast, I'll do that. It's not the best idea, but it works if you're in a hurry.
Yeah. But,
well, and you can, if you've got enough fabric that you can cut it off.
Right.
You know, and it's just on the edges. That's not that bad.
Right. The cheap ones are good, I guess, if you're just starting and you're not sure you're going to like. Some people just don't like the scroll rods. I don't know if they don't like using the two hands, the fact that you need to put it on a stand. You can't – holding it's very hard on your grip because you're holding it with one hand and stitching with the other. That's not very very good for your posture. But if you want to try it, buying a cheap one is a great idea. But then I would say if you like using it, it's worthwhile to invest up if you can.
Yeah.
And then Cindy and I both have, I think, the next one up, which is the – and this is the big one I have. And I bought this big one. What's it called? I can never remember the name. It's a lock frame?
Lock scroll.
So it has the groove thing in here. You take it out. I can take this one out. And I bought this one originally for Alice Usher, which is a huge Bristol sampler, so I could have something to put her in and not hold her. So it has one of these little rods, and you stick it in the slit, the fabric into the slit, and you kind of straighten it up. And then it's supposed to keep it fairly tight. Well, mine is never really tight. And on this big of a thing, it would be almost impossible to get it drum tight, I think, as wide as this is. I don't think there's any way you can keep this middle from sagging.
No, it's going to sag because that dowel, that scroll rod is too thin. It needs to be much thicker in diameter. Yeah.
So mine don't bend, but I thought I had the longest ones, and I haven't had any problem. I don't know if I have one that long.
This but, is long. I don't know, could, how long is it? It's like almost a yard. It's almost a yard.
Yeah, you could pole vault with that thing. Jeez.
Yeah. I haven't had problems with them bending. Now, I know they've changed the wood. But yours, you've had yours for a while, right?
Yeah, a few years. But I don't, again, I don't torque mine. And so it's, and I loosen it after I stitch with it every time. Mm-hmm. Always.
Oh, I don't do that.
I don't either.
Because you, Lord knows when I go back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if that makes any difference, really.
Yeah.
I used to worry about that. And then I would, you know, people with slate frames leave them sit for months. And I thought, what's the difference? Drum tight is drum tight, you know.
But it's going to stretch your fabric slowly, won't it? Linen does stretch.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt.
As you guys do it, I'd let it loosen a little bit, give it a little break, a little breathing room.
There's no harm in doing it. No, not at all. Yeah.
So I have the same lock scroll system, and I like them a lot, but I struggle a little bit with getting the fabric in the crease and the rod, the stick in there, and especially with the ends, keeping them straight. Mm-hmm. So on the next one that I do, I'm going to turn the ends in and create a little pocket for that stick to slide into. And then I can drop it into the slot in the rods.
Right.
And the ends aren't going to come loose. The middle's not going to come loose. And Gary, if you want to show your piece where you've got it, you don't have it. You've got a different scroll frame, but you're not happy because it's not straight.
Right.
I think that would solve the problem for you.
Well, you mentioned that before we started recording, and that's the next thing I'm doing with this is I'm taking it off because I've got extra fabric top and bottom just because of the piece that I had. I am absolutely taking it off, and I am sewing pockets because to me that will solve this problem. I don't usually have trouble getting this in the slot and getting it even. For some reason, this didn't come out as straight as I normally can get it. But when you mentioned about just sewing a pocket and then jamming it in there and then sliding the rod through there, to me that will absolutely eliminate the problem. It's worth a try anyway. Eliminate the problem of having it. Because I just don't, and I realize this isn't too bad, but I just don't like that wavy line. I'd rather have it, I don't want it dead straight, but I sure would like it closer than it is. I'm trying that. I think that's a good idea. Sewing machine's coming out.
Tell people what you're stitching. Tell people what you're stitching.
Oh, Botany Bay.
Watching. Yeah.
Botany Bay, Fox and Rabbit. It's a monster of a thing. And the chart is here somewhere. I get so many things going on. Well, I'm not going to dig it out. It'll take half an hour.
No.
It's Botany Bay. It's beautiful. Big Australian sampler. So, But I'm trying that.
So you should tell us what kind of frame that is.
Well, this is a Millennium frame. So this is, I have two of these. I've got two lengths of scroll rod, and then I have two side pieces. One, this is the short one, and then I have the longer one. And the longer one is almost too long because if you're starting at the top, it's too much of a reach. And I really wish I had two of these, but they take so long to get that I just don't bother.
I'm sorry. How big are those? Do they just have two sizes of the Millennium? Are there?
I think they have three, but I'm not sure. This is the shorter one, and this one is going to be, when it's collapsed down, is about 8 inches, and the other one's a good 3 or 4 inches longer than that, and then they extend. But these, I mean, this to me, that's why I got rid of my other ones, because I was never using them. They were just collecting dust. Because these give me what I want, which is absolute drum tight all the way across. I don't get channels where it's loose and tight and loose and tight. It's tight all the way across, and it stays that way. And if it's, you know, initially when you set it up and things are getting stretched out, you know, just a twist on both ends of the screws there, and she tightens right up and it stays there. And that's what I like. And I just always have to have it tight. So.
Okay. So I think some of the variation in tightness is due to thread buildup.
Mm-hmm.
As you stitch, and yes. And also on the ends, because I not only have thread here, but I also have beads. And because I have beads, I've put some batting in underneath it, because I don't want to stretch the linen out where the beads are.
Yeah.
So it's fatter here, which makes the sides looser.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't tighten this down so much that I'd have tight sides. If this was bigger and I needed it, I would probably use some side tensioners.
Yeah.
But because it's so small, I don't really need it.
And that's scroll too.
This is the lock scroll also.
Yeah.
And so as you stitch, and your threads are going to add thickness to the piece, and as you roll it up, this is going to be fatter in the middle than it is out here on the sides.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, one of the things that makes it hard to have the sides tight.
But in the middle, it's tight all the way across your stitching area.
Yes. Well, so yeah, sometimes, and I don't know if this is because I don't have it exactly straight, but I have had some problems where I needed to pull it a little tighter this way.
Okay.
So the side tensioners help with that too.
Yeah.
I looked to see what is available in these. These are called lock scroll. It's LOKSCROLL. The scroll rods come from 9 to 30 inches. The side bars are in 6 to 10 inch increments. And I'm with Gary. I like the shorter side bars. I have some that are longer, but I don't like to reach too far over, because then you're leaning instead of sitting the way you should be. And so I prefer the shorter bars. And I did take the knobs off the end of these so people could see. These are not separate knobs. They are actually on the scroll bar. And they help you turn it so that you can tighten the fabric. And then you just tighten down these knobs on either end. So it's really easy to use. I think the hardest part is getting it mounted. And I think that's going to be true with anything, getting it mounted straight.
Yeah.
Right.
And securely.
And you do want to get it mounted straight, because then if it's as straight as you can. I'm not a perfectionist, so as straight as you can, so you can have a good mounting. But I think to Gary's point with his Millennium, I know people who have ordered it and waited for it. I think it's worthwhile. I think my boys ordered mine for me, and they waited. They ordered it for me for one birthday, and they said, "You're getting this. This is your birthday present."
Sometime.
And it came the next year for my birthday.
Yeah.
Literally, it was my next year, and they said, "Oh, good, 2-for-1 for us. We win."
Yeah. Well, and it's worth it, though. I mean, they're worth it.
Right. And I would buy, if I was going to do that way, I would buy two at that point. If I knew I was going to order another one, I would order two arms and two sidebars again. I wouldn't just buy one. I would buy two, because they're so much better. And then I probably would get rid of some of my junkier ones. but I use, I don't take things off my scroll frames. Once they're on there, I leave them on until I finish. Unless Gary decides we're going to start a new project and I don't have any ones empty and big enough, and then I have to go and get my seam ripper out and rip things out, then I'm sad.
Well, see, that's the thing. Now, because I bought a set, the lock scroll, they have a set where you get two or three different lengths of rods. And I bought that, but they were the newer ones. And I was getting too much sag in the middle because they had to change wood. It's not their fault. They couldn't get the wood that that you guys have is a much harder, stiffer wood. And I was just getting too much sag, so I had to return them. And they were very kind to let me return them well after what I should have returned them. But I like the system because you can tighten that down and it'll stay.
I put the ends back on, and now you can see it's nice and tight.
Oh yeah, it tightened right up. Yeah.
Yeah, it was loose because I had the ends off and it was unrolled a little bit. But I don't have it straight. I can tell, when I look here along the bottom, looking at the light through it, I can see that the linen is kind of pulled here, and it goes up here. But, your framer will take care of that. This won't be framed. This is a bell pull.
Mm.
But once it's off the scroll and, it's ironed and relaxed, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
It won't be out of whack.
But see, I would like to have a set of smaller ones because these Millenniums are, I use them for samplers and stuff. But that's why I bought that originally, was I wanted a set of smaller, shorter scroll rods. Shorter and lighter, but I just couldn't get them tight enough, and I just knew I wasn't going to be happy with them. But the system they use for tightening is very effective, and it's basically the same design for putting the cloth on the rods as Millennium uses. They just use a flat piece of wood instead of a dowel. And so I didn't have any trouble with that. That was fine. I'd love to have three or four shorter ones. I just mount everything on something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you might try the roll of frames.
Yeah.
I just bought these, but I have used, I don't know if they were roll of frames. I have an old set that I've had for a long, long time. So they probably are not roll of frames, but these are the way you mount your fabric on this is to put it on these nails, these pins. And so there's no, all you have to do is make sure you have it straight.
Yeah.
And then you put the other side back on. And something I just noticed about this is the end tells you how long it is.
Oh, there we go.
This Simple is a thing. 22, and the other end is red. And I didn't know why that was, and I'm still not exactly sure, but I did learn that the ends of the sidebars are also color-coded. So in a pair of scroll rods, you have one that has a red end and one that has a black end. And the sidebars are the same thing. One is red and one is black.
Okay.
So you match those.
And what's the brand on this?
This is the Roller Frame.
Roller Frame, okay.
You talked to the guy that makes these.
Yes.
At one of the...
Nashville.
Nashville markets, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have one scroll rod in the frame. And so these have, just a hole, kind of like what Beth was showing before, but these are actually two separate pieces. And by the way, they are very nicely finished. Mm-hmm. All of these edges are rounded over. They're nice. And these come in, the roller bars come in lengths from 5 to 45 inches.
Oh.
And the side bars come in lengths from 7 to 22.
Mm.
So you could do gigantic pieces on these.
Yeah.
If you know, he wanted to. So I ordered two sets because I had two things that I want to mount.
Mm-hmm.
And one set I ordered from Needle in a Haystack, and I can't remember where I ordered the other ones from. Needle in a Haystack also sells, these are Kay's Creations mini tri knobs to replace the wing nut.
Yeah, much better.
Much better. Yeah, so I'll have to order another pair from them, another set from them for this other one.
So why didn't I buy Roller Frame when I bought that other? I don't know.
Because I was bragging about Artisan Designs.
Oh, okay. So it's not my fault. Okay, good.
Now, and because of your experience with the new roller bars with the lock scrolls, you know, I don't think I need to have mine as tight as you want yours,
mm-hmm.
but I do want it to be tight. I don't want it to be flexing in the middle.
Yeah.
So these seem pretty, I mean, they flex a little bit. The other ones that I bought are 30 inches, I think. And this end bar has places for two different adjustments. So if you want your scroll bars closer, you use the inner ones. Farther apart, you use the outer ones. These are 10 inches.
Yeah.
Which, again, I like it that they mark the ends.
Right.
And then this is the
color coding on the other end.
Yeah. I have to try to figure out what that color coding means. I don't know. I don't know.
I like the fact that all aspects of that are two separate pieces. You can see the nails in the scroll rods that when you mount the cloth on there and then clamp that down, that's going to stay there.
Yep.
Right.
You know, but then on the sides, I mean, it just looks to me like with two different pieces on the vertical bars that you're going to get a better clamp than you would if it's just slit partway down and you're counting on bending the wood. Because you don't have to bend the wood with this system.
The other thing is, this is a magnet.
Ah.
So, you know, you always need magnets.
Right.
To park your needles, you know. On a big piece, I might have two or three needle minders. But, you know, another one is never a bad thing.
Right.
No, especially on the bars. I like that.
Yeah, I thought that's clever. I like that.
Well, all right. I got to look into that then. Because I would just like to have two or three smaller, lighter sizes for smaller projects. It would just help a lot. This is first world problems, you know. I need more scroll frames, you know. It's like ridiculous, but whatever.
Well, I bought this fabric, this is banding. I'm not going to pull it all out. This banding from Kim for doing AC Bluebird. And I realized, I thought, oh, I surely I have a really small, like a belt size scroll rods. Do I?
No.
And I really do. I mean, this is my smallest one that's empty. I think this is the smallest one I have. And it's too big.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd work if I'm just going to hold it in there to stitch. But if sometimes I do like a little bit more tension than I can get on these, especially with all the fabric that I'm going to be holding on here. And there's no way to get all the way across unless I lace it. And you know, I'm not going to do that because I'm
well, right. Because every time you moved it, you'd have to unlace it.
Right.
Yeah.
No one has time for that.
Yeah.
No one has time for that.
But you're so exactly right. If you had like 8-inch scroll rods, because that looked like it was about 6 inches, 5 inches, something like that. If you had 8-inch scroll rods, right, it'd be perfect. Yeah.
Right.
Right. And like I said, roller frame goes down to 5 inches.
Yeah.
For their scroll bars. So, and I think they're really reasonably priced. I don't remember what I paid for these, but they, I was surprised. They're not horribly expensive.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's my next, I gotta, yeah.
Thank you, Cindy, for helping us spend money.
Yeah. But see, here's what it is for me. Okay. Like everything I do, even in hoops, I have some kind of holder. I'll have a table clamp. I don't hold anything in hand, so I don't worry about them getting dirty. And because I don't actually hold the hoops, I don't hold anything. I always have something else to hold it, just because I don't like to. But what happens, and this is me just being me. When I have linen and I get it all ironed and get all the wrinkles out, then I hate putting it in a hoop because I just worked to get all the wrinkles out. Now I'm going to add these circles, and I know that you can iron them out later and blah, blah. I know all the things, but if I could put them on a scroll frame and retain that non-wrinkled thing, I'd be much happier. But I have two Millennium frames and they're both occupied at the moment. And I'm not taking stuff off. And so there I am. And I've got several hoops, so I use the hoops. But, yeah, I would like to do that. And, like, I've just in the last few days here, I've been setting up, I've got, four projects that I've been setting up. And now I've got three pieces of linen laying on a table because I don't want them wrinkled. And but I can't leave them laying out because I don't want them getting dusty. So now I'm going to have to get either something to put them on, or I'm going to have to get some PVC pipe and wrap them up and label them so they don't get wrinkled and they don't get dirty. And, what a miserable existence, you know what I mean? But still, it's the way it is. So,
right.
But it's, yeah. I like the idea of having some smaller, I like having different sizes. It's nice to have the different sizes.
Yeah.
So that'll be, yeah. And in multiple projects.
Right.
Just, it's good for your brain.
Right. But it, if I had smaller scroll frames, I would take other projects when we go to our son's. If I had a smaller scroll frame, I would take a different project instead of one that goes in a hoop because
right.
I don't need this 36 inch long whatever to put it in. So, yeah. Okay. All right. That's enough. That 15 minute segment on scroll frames. Now at 35 minutes. So that worked out great.
Well, that's another stitch pad.
We're well on our way.
Are you surprised? Are you surprised?
No, I'm not. No, there's no way we'd have done it in 15 minutes. I had to be optimistic. Yep. For those of you who jumped to the 37-minute mark to listen to the discussion about stitch pads, I just remind you that this show is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery at sassyjackstitchery.com. Please check out the website for all of your stitching needs, and join the Facebook group so that you keep up on all the upcoming activities. So, all right, so let's move on to the second half of this, which will be now the second two-thirds of this. So talking about stitch path, and I don't know if that's a good term or not, but it's what I've used. But to me, it's a concept, more a concept of anything, because, everybody's going to do it different. But it's how you go about stitching an element in whatever your project is. Doesn't matter if it's needlepoint, cross stitch, a sampler, whatever it is. It's how you go about stitching that element so that you keep your holes open and clean, your stitches lay right, you can maintain tension, and you don't get lumps and bumps and those kinds of things. And so for me, it's always been, I've just always done it. Like before I tackle an element, I mentally, even if it's just 2 or 3 seconds, I mentally go through how am I going to go about this to make sure that the stitches, each stitch goes the way it's supposed to. And I'll admit, especially with samplers, you can't always do that. Sometimes you just have to stitch it and just be glad it's 40 count and people will never see it. But on a lot of counted canvas stuff, if you don't do it right, it will be visible. It will alter the look of that stitch, especially if it's a big Walnetto or Jessica or something like that. It won't look right, and it's worth that effort. So what we did here is Cindy put together some things that we'll put on the screen to talk about needlepoint, needlepoint canvas, stitching that on needlepoint canvas. And then I put some things together for a cross stitch. I use samplers, but it doesn't really matter. And but I do want to say up front, when we talk about this, everybody has their way of doing it. We're not saying this is the right and only way, not by any stretch. This is the way we do it. You take out of it what you want. If you don't want anything to do with any of it, that's your business. It's your piece, your stitching.
Right. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yep.
Right.
So don't
make yourself happy.
Right. Do not think for a second that we are dictating anything here. This is the way we do it. Maybe there's a tip in there for you. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe you laugh at us because we think we're ridiculous, but you know, whatever. And I'm sure that I'm ridiculous most of the time when it comes to this stuff, but to me, it's just important. It's the little things that over the course of a big sampler make a big visual difference when you put it all together. I think it makes a difference. I think it's worth the effort. So, all right. So we're going to start. We'll go over here and we'll start with what Cindy put together. So go for it.
Okay, so this is 18 count canvas, and I'm using a number 8 purl because I wanted you to be able to see the stitch. I probably wouldn't do this stitch with a number 8 purl, but the number 5 purl, you kind of lose things. So this is a gobelin stitch, and a gobelin is really just a straight stitch. This one happens to be a true diagonal, but you can do it up and down, right and left. You can do a different slant that isn't a true diagonal. There's lots of different ways you can do it. I did this over 4 intersections, and this might be something that you would stitch as a border, for instance. So on the top is the front of the needlework, and number 1 is where you're stitching your thread comes up at the top and you go down to the left, so that arrow shows you which way you're going, and you're going to go back up to the top and down to the left. And down at the bottom you can see what the back looks like. The other one, number 2, you're starting at the bottom and going up to the top. And you can see that on the back for number 1, you have a true diagonal again. It's over 4 intersections, but that's not the case on number 2. So I try to do number 1 whenever I can. And the reason is that with a true diagonal, your tension is more consistent. Does it look better? Maybe. Probably we wouldn't notice it with a number 5 purl, but you might see it like this with a number 8 purl, where the threads aren't laying exactly the way you'd like them to on the front. You also, I think, have a better chance of keeping your holes open. If you're going to share the hole with another thread later on, you want to make sure that you pull in an opposite direction. So that's great. You can see that those holes are open enough that another thread, you won't have any trouble sharing that at all.
Now, let me interrupt you here. To me, this in all of these, this is the goal, is that when you're always pulling your thread toward the middle of the stitch. Or you're trying to, so that you're keeping, so the tension is pulling on these holes here to keep them open. So when you come back on the top, if there's something coming in at this angle or that angle, which I'll use the right mouse and then you'll see it, that you've got room to bring that needle through and you're not getting hung up on this thread.
Right. Right. Now, if you look at 2, those holes are pretty open also.
Yes.
It's just that they don't have quite the same diagonal slant, which tells me that the tension isn't maybe quite as consistent. I'm not really sure.
There's a difference.
There is a little bit of a difference, yeah. Now, would you see this from 6 feet away? No. It's really only when you're up close to it that you, and really looking at it closely. And by the way, this is a canvas with a metallic thread in it. That's what those gray flecks are. And it's just happens to be what I had on stretcher bars, and I had enough room that I could. What I'm working on, it is only taking up a small part of this piece. So,
see, and I find this really interesting. I find this really interesting because I always have a problem with the stitch getting it to look full. So you know, my eye sees the difference in between one and two. It is much fuller. I think when you, if you're doing a border that way, you would see it as fuller. And I'm always struggle with this one. It's like, okay, well, it's a diagonal in the back. Why does this not look right? Why does it seem like I'm going in the wrong direction with this one? Why?
Because you're not doing a real diagonal in the back.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. And that's it. And you're right. And I just, this pointing this out, it's just like blows my mind. I'm going to go rip out a border that I have started and redo it because I now know what the problem is with it. And it bugs, because it bugs me.
But see,
I'm like, this is wrong.
This to me, when you look at the back, this is what tells me why the front isn't right. Look how open and loose that is. Compared to number one.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm pretty consistent with my tension. I didn't try to stitch that one looser or anything. I just stitched it the way that I always stitch it. So, yeah, you're right. You can see more canvas where on the number one, you don't see the canvas at all.
No.
And that's what's on the back is always going to affect what's on the front.
Yep.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said at the beginning, it's a matter of, you know, it's not going to make a bit of difference at 6 feet away, but I can see, when I'm trying to get my work to look better, this is one of those things that it bumps it up a notch. If you're wondering, like when you take something to a state fair or you turn it into national to be judged, you know, how can I make my piece better? This is, I think, one of those things. This
right.
would
right.
bump up your piece.
Mm-hmm. So see, if you go to the next one, oh, go ahead, Gary.
Well, for me, Beth, you talked about a border. See, it, you know, these little 6-8 stitches that she did, we can see a difference. Now extend that on a border all the way around the piece, and
right.
that visual accumulates and. Now it's a definite difference, you know,
right.
And
then
the competition comes along and gets a blue ribbon because they did it the other way. I was going to say the right way, but there is no right way. You do it how you want,
yeah.
But you know, because the visual impact is different. It's tighter, fuller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay. So if you're doing a border around a piece, eventually you're going to come to a corner. And if you continue the way that you are going with the thread going from top right to lower left, when you get to that corner, if you continue that, you're going to wind up doing that odd diagonal as you're going down. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So look at the lower picture. Because you can't really, you can kind of see it from the front. You know, the threads aren't laying quite as good. But here's the back. And you can see on this one, I put some lines. So there's four threads on the top between the top and the bottom where you come up and where you go down. But on the side where I continued the same motion, but now you can see gaps. And also there's only three threads from the top and between the top and the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where you're elevating what you're doing. It is by taking care of that problem, your both sides of your border are going to look nice. There's a couple of ways you can do it. One is that you can go back to the middle, end at the corner, go back to the middle in the, I don't have a picture of that, wherever, and stitch back towards the corner in the same, using the same stitch motion. I don't really like to do that because you got to end the thread, and start over again and blah, blah, blah. So if you go to the next one, I use a pin stitch to change my direction. So can you get closer on that? So what I tried to show here is you see as I was going along on the top, I was going top to bottom, and then I got to the corner, and that's where I put the little pin stitch. So now I do try to keep in mind direction. I don't want to put the pin stitch, I want to keep that tension in the pin stitch. So I, make sure that I'm kind of going in whatever direction I need to go in to make sure I've got tension on both ends of the stitch. And then I just start at the bottom and go to the top. And then on the back, that maintains that 4x4 stitch coverage. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
Yes.
this is what I wanted to learn.
So you see a gap there at the corner.
Right here.
Right, that's where I took the pin stitch, is right in there.
Okay.
But now you can see the yellow lines on the top. There's four threads in between the top and the bottom. And on the left, there's four threads between the top and the bottom.
Because you did the pin stitch so you could change direction.
Correct.
Your up down direction.
Correct.
So then, go ahead, Beth. I'm sorry. I
Well,
have
I'm
so many
just thinking.
questions about this.
I just think, I've had problems with this. I've had mine not come out nice, and especially, I hate to say, like if you're using a neon rays or something, and you're just kind of going along, do 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 do, you can really see the gaps more, even more than we saw on your with the pearl cotton. It's
Yeah.
that's a great idea to do a little pin stitch. I never even thought of that.
Okay, and so let me make sure I understand. So you're going top down, top down, top down, all the way across. You get to the corner, you do the pin stitch.
Then you're going bottom up.
And that allows you then to go bottom up and still be stitching into the center. You're pulling into the center of the stitch.
Right. So that's obviously the needle up on the top right
Right.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the beauty of these stitches. People who may not have done as much needlepoint or counting canvas, you can hide a lot of stuff behind these stitches that go over multiple holes.
Right.
You can do, and nobody ever sees it.
Right. So I figured this out when I was doing Tony Maneri's Stars for the Millennium, because there is a lot of borders around each of the motifs, and they're done with stranded threads. So this just looked better to me to actually change the direction of the stitch so that I was getting the same kind of coverage on the front and the back with the stranded cotton. But I hadn't thought about the ribbons like neon rays, but you're right, Beth, that exactly the same thing would be the case.
Right. It just I've struggled with, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing the stitch correctly, but why is mine not looking as good? And Mind blowing. My mind is just what just it has just exploded. Like I said, I was working on a piece that, and I've got to take it out anyway. I didn't, you know, there's a problem. And so I'm like, now I'm going to really take it out. Now it's coming. Now that baby's coming out because I got to do it right. I've got not right, but I've got to do it so I like how it looks. I've done enough needlepoint. I'm much pickier about how my needlepoint looks in comparison to my cross stitch. So because I can see it, it's easier for me to see the mistakes in my needlepoint for some reason, where I
Well, it's
don't like
bigger.
it, where I want to get better.
Yeah, when you're working on 38 or 40 count as opposed to 18 count, the stitches are bigger.
Okay, this now I gotta try this. This is cool.
Okay. So there's one more.
Yeah. Well, let me go
So,
back. Let me go back to a couple of things. Okay,
okay.
so where was it? I was gonna. Yeah. No, that's not gonna
Lost that
work.
train of thought.
No, I was gonna show. Oh, here it is. Okay, this is just Cindy anchoring a thread or carrying a thread out of the way for whatever she's doing. But when we talk about keeping the holes open, this is what you want to avoid right here, is that
Right.
thread that goes that direction. You don't want that to happen. You want it to come back this way. And you can see what happens to the hole. Now you have a plugged hole that you have to either shove this thread out of the way with your needle, or you end up splitting it, or who knows what happens.
And
That's what
either
you want.
way, it's going to disturb the stitch.
Right. And then things don't line up and they don't look right. And you can it's noticeable. And so that was one thing. And then the other thing that the last thing you want to do with these kinds of stitches is come up, go down, then go over, and then go
Right.
up and back up so that there's nothing on the back side. Because
Right.
that'll never look good. And you think, well, yeah, but look at all the thread that it's using up on the back side. It's double amount of thread. You got to not care. It's just you just got to
Thread
say,
is cheap
yeah, exactly.
ish, cheapish.
Because
Yeah.
people will try and do that with a satin stitch, and this is effectively a satin stitch to save
Sure.
thread, and it doesn't look anywhere near good enough. You can't, things don't line up. It doesn't look good.
The only time you do that is if you're going to do a tramé. Do you know what that is?
Do a what? Say it again.
Tramé.
Oh, don't know that one.
Okay, it's basically couching. So you lay down your foundation threads, and usually it's over quite a distance. You know, it could be 3 or 4 inches, or you know, maybe it's a couple of inches. But you're going to what you want to do is just lay your foundation threads down. And it doesn't matter if they are not straight, because you're going to come over it with another thread and couch it down. And that is going to make it lay straight. And I think I have an example of that, if I can find it, that I can bring next week.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm going to say is sometimes even like when I do set a padded satin stitch, they say, oh, it doesn't matter. A lot of times I go ahead and do it just like a regular satin stitch, go around and around like in a you're doing a circle. Because I have found when I do satin stitch, then it gives me some place to bury my threads, especially if you're doing a tiny motif. You might as it's not really wasting your threads. It gives you a place to bury them. Even though it's a padded stitch and you're going to cover it anyway, a lot of times people will just do, you know, try to s save the thread or whatever. But I think it's better if you go all the way around.
Yeah, you sacrifice when you try to save thread like that, you sacrifice the quality of your work just about every time. Yeah. Okay. All right, so that I just wanted to point those two things out. All right, here's Byzantine.
Over two intersections. So you could use a pin stitch to change directions for this if you wanted to. This is only, but you know, it's you're changing direction quite a lot. pretty frequently. And so I generally just cheat this one a little bit and I do change directions, but I do it, you can expand on the back where the circles are. Here's where I cheated. I just do what Gary said not to do. And you do have to recognize that that is going to make that hole a little more difficult to share. But, you know, if you pull it pretty snug and it doesn't look as good with the number eight pearl. That's why I did it in five as well, because five is bigger and it's going to disguise any little variation in the stitch. So if you go back to the front of the canvas side, I think that, you know, you can see it doesn't really affect, there's maybe you can see maybe a little bit, probably at the bottom. So one, you know, if in one direction, you're going to share a hole at the top, in the other direction, you're going to share, not share a hole. You're going to just skip over to the next hole.
Yeah.
At the bottom.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is an instance where, like when we were getting started with this segment, you can't always do it. You know, you think, all right, I need to do it this way every time, but it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes you have to just compromise and move on, or you just drive yourself nuts. But
right.
And this is a case where you would not want to try to come up in those two holes where the thread just goes straight across from one to the next. You'd want to go down in those holes because you can, with your, you know, where you're sharing that thread, that hole with another thread, because you have a little more control over your needle and you can avoid that little stitch a little easier.
Yeah. Rather than just jamming the needle through it and moving on, which.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Byzantine is one of my favorite stitches to do. It's a lot of fun that you can make it any way that you want. And in fact, a regular Byzantine is even more fun. And when I'm filling a space with a regular Byzantine, I just, you know, go over how many, go down however many, go over how many. It's not even. And then the next row, the first row might be over two. The next row might be just over one.
Mm-hmm.
Following that same pattern, it gives you some really cool texture.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Especially if you're changing your threads too, which, you know, another layer of texture right. There too.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
So all I right, think now, that, I think I'm done. Yeah.
That was yours. Yeah. Okay. All right, so this one, this is all an example off of this Fracture Bees by Hello from Liz Matthews that I'm doing this piece. I'm doing it on paper. I'm doing it on 18-count paper just to experience the paper for no other reason. And, boy, that paper is bright white, let me just tell you. So what we'll look at in this example is this right here, this border, because I'm just getting started with this. And so I'm just going to show how I tackle this section here in a series of photos. We're just making X's now, but we're doing it on paper, which is why it'll look weird compared to a linen. But and by the way, it's fun to do. So, all right. So we're up here at the top, starting way up here in the upper left corner, and so I just come down, and I just make X's all the way down. Nothing new or different, other than when I make the final cross, I always go up so that when I come back down, I'm pulling against that hole up there. Mm-hmm. To then I come down and make the next one. So I'm always pulling against the hole to keep it open. And you can see, I think you can see it's unfortunately black. But this hole is still, there's plenty of open in there. Mm-hmm. And then when I get down to the bottom, then because there's this channel of color down here, I don't want to finish this off and then stitch in the channel, because now I'm disturbing holes on both sides and all four corners that are already filled. So I came down here and I just parked the thread, just put it over the side, stuck it in a hole to get it out of the way. And then I just did straight crosses top to bottom down the middle. Now you'll see that this color changes in a couple of photos. You'll see this color changes. That's because my assistant handed me the wrong color of thread. And he didn't understand that you use the color of thread that's next to the number. And so I had to stop and explain it to him. And he's, you know, I think he got it.
It's better next time, right?
Right. Yeah, we'll hope for that. All right, so we get down here. So I had to rip that out and put the other color, the proper color in. And then if I go back to this, see, what I'm doing is I'm coming down here and stopping. Then I fill this channel with color. So I'm only, and then I'm going down into the black holes, the stitch holes. I do everything I can to make sure I go down into the black holes, and then let this is all open. So I do that.
Wait a minute. So you said you're going down into the black holes. Does that mean your cross stitch is going upper right to bottom left?
No, I don't change that. The first cross, I go upper right to bottom left, and then I'm going across, which I don't like doing, but it, you know, and then I'm coming up and then going down. I try to go down in both instances.
Okay. So
are you doing each cross individually?
Yeah.
In the middle section where you did the color?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm trying to go down all the way down here on this side, and then just make sure these holes stay open here.
Mm-hmm. So, but you're, oops, normally you do bottom left to upper right.
Yeah, normally. Right? Yeah.
And then, I wanted to make a point of that, because I do the same thing. I reverse, you know, where my top stitch and bottom stitch start, so that I can go in, my needle will go into that filled hole instead,
right,
of coming out of it whenever I can. And having your stitch go along the bottom is the same as going side to side or up and down.
Yeah.
It's the same distance as the up and down.
Right.
But it just feels weird, doesn't it?
Right, right. Yeah. No, I manipulate where I start my crosses all the time to get, so the needle's going down where I want it to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which you explained it better than I did, but yes. Yeah. So what I have to do here is I'm trying to get a continuous thing. And there was a thread change in here somewhere because I didn't cut the thread long enough. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to go down, fill the color, then come up. And then, whoops, what did I just do? Something stupid. What did I do?
No.
Well, that's a new trick.
Yeah.
What is this?
Could you move that over onto where your photo of your your stitching is?
I can't.
That'd be nice. Rats.
That would be a cool trick. I don't know what I did. Well, darn it.
Oh.
Oh, come on. You got to be kidding me. All right. Well, we'll use this one then. I don't care. So I go down and then I come back up because I want to go down because I want a free run of just crosses all the way down this channel to this point. Okay. So I got to figure out what that trick is. I might be able to use that. So I get down here to the bottom, and then I do half crosses all the way up. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, and then Phil coming back down and finish the crosses coming back down again, going down into the color channel. So however I need to stitch it, I do that. Then I come across here, and then you can see I went half crosses all the way up to get to the top, and then filled the crosses all the way down, coming down here, because then that gets me, and here's where the color, here I realized I had the wrong color. So it comes down, so then now I'm going to start this next one, all right? So I've filled that all in. So I always make full crosses unless it's an instance like this. And then now I make half crosses here because I'm going to come back up in a minute here. So that, and then I go up here, make full crosses, make the run all the way down, then stop down here and park. And I'll go back to that chart that I messed up. But now we're down here. So I come down here, and this is where I park, and then I put the color in here.
Right. So you're trying to keep your, trying to not stop and start, trying not to run under your threads to get to a spot.
Right.
Or that thread is used again. You're trying to keep a continuous line of a color going.
Right.
So that way it it's smoother.
Right. And I'm starting new threads. I'm starting new threads in here, depending on how it comes out. You know, I'm not pretending this is one long continuous thread. There's new starts in here. And this is two strands, so I'm using the loop start, so it's a pretty easy start.
Right. But you're not going, so if you didn't do that, if you didn't follow the stitch path you went, let's say you did the, it's kind of like a circle, like a, it looks like an ear of wheat. And then you said, well, I'm going to do full X's going up. And then you got to the top. Well, then you're going to have to end your thread.
Right.
Go back to the bottom and start the next motif down. And that's bulky. Sometimes we don't trim our threads close enough. Then you might have a little piece of thread floating in the back, and that doesn't look nice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
And yeah, exactly. I'm trying to keep a clean run. Since this black runs all the way through, I'm trying to keep a clean run of that black as best I can. And I play those games. Right. Like, I'll play those games in all these flowers, too. You know, I'll do that. So, yeah, so I put the color in, and then I come up. So I come up here, but now this time I come up here, and remember I made those half crosses right here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I come up and I fill them in, and then I have the run, I have a straight run all the way down. But also note that these crosses extend over, so I did those before I came up.
So you don't have to do those as you're going down.
I didn't have to do them, and also didn't forget them as I'm making a clean run down and getting all excited about getting to the next item. And then, oh, geez, I left that one X out. You know how that goes. So then I do these half crosses up here, and then this tells me, I leave half crosses as signals. I do that a lot where I'll use it to know where I, especially if I'm doing like a leafy plant and a sampler, I'll leave half crosses to know where the joint is. Where the next branch goes off, and then it's a straight run down, and then it's just the same routine here. Half crosses go up and then work down and then, do the same thing. But that's the game I play, and to keep that continuous run. And I think I keep cleaner crosses all the way through. And like you said, Beth, where I'm not ending off, not getting up here to the stop top, ending with half a strand left. I'm using making maximum use of my thread all the way through, and so that's what I do, and I don't have to, you know, I don't think about it for an hour. Well, you know, but I do stop before I start each of these things, and then say, all right, this is the route that I'm going to take on this thing, and so.
Okay, so when I first started cross-stitching, I would just go over and do that second row with the black.
Mm-hmm.
Would have just gone back and forth, doing the Danish cross stitch method, half cross and then come back, and then fill in with the gold or whatever color that is. The
Yeah.
problem with that is that you don't have those clean holes.
Nope.
You've got a thread that is going kind of at a, well, it's a diagonal, but you're not leaving your hole open for your other stitch to go in there.
Right.
Is it real obvious? Maybe not. I mean, I've gotten awards at the state fair with cross stitch pieces done that way. Cause I didn't know that there was another way to do it. I don't want to say I was doing it wrong, because it's not wrong. But it makes for a cleaner look when you don't jump.
Yeah.
Over the only, I will do that if I've already, if I had, let's say, stitched the gold first, I'll jump back and forth across that, because at that point it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But you can't see it. But
if I'm going to go back and fill in between two rows of stitches like this, I would do exactly what you did. Did you take a picture of the back?
No, but I can show you. It's sitting right here. The other thing is I get a clean channel here where there's no stitching.
Yeah, and I wouldn't do it there. I wouldn't jump.
No.
Across.
No. You have to come over top or bottom and do this one here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even on linen, you have bigger holes with perforated paper.
Right.
But on linen or Aida, if you jump across that open space in the back, you're going to change the color of it. Ever
yes.
so slightly.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using a dark thread like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, and by the way,
Go ahead.
Nope, go.
Well, I was just going to say, all this whole discussion, you all made me stop and think about my cross stitching, because I normally do a thread complete. If I have my needle is full of one color, I just fill it in. So if my needle was full of black, I would go up and down and back and around. I never thought about it laying better if I would have done the color next to it. Sometimes I think about it, but most of the time I'm just like in my la la land and I'm just stitching away and then later I'll look at it and I'm like, well, that wasn't so good. But then I just move on, because it's not for me. I'm not going to rip it out. But I think you can tell a difference. And so it does make a difference, especially when it's in those long grooves like you've got. I think it's because there's more stitches there. Maybe one or two maybe wouldn't be as noticeable, but I know when I've done that, you can really, it changes. It must be the tension or something going on there, because you're going through dirty holes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So.
And if anyone tries this paper, this is a Mill Hill 18 count paper, focus on bringing your thread up and down as vertical as possible, because the edges of those papers will scrub your threads and fray them. So you want to,
that's true.
Yeah. You want to go up and down as much as possible, straight as possible. Mm-hmm. Then I, two things on this one. And one is this, obviously this is a sampler, portion of a sampler. And so, for instance, this tree here, I use the same approach with branched trees or whatever, plants or whatever it is. So I'll start down here and then I'll go up and over. And then I'll do some half crosses here, or maybe I'll just do one half cross, and then I'll come down and I'll stitch all this thing, but I'll do half crosses in here so that when I fill them in, I come back here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll manipulate it however I need to and come back here and fill in and come up. And then I'll do half crosses up here and then back down, and then so you play the same game, but that keeps a continuous stitch. And so basically, then everything is clean. And then if I can make it work, I'll set it up so that I do half crosses all the way back to the stem. And then that will give me a good place to anchor. If I'm anchoring, because that's the other part, is where are you going to anchor if you end up with, you know, having to anchor here? You can anchor here, but if you can get back to that stem, which in many cases is more than one stitch wide, then you have a place to anchor and to start, and then you can go and do the same kind of thing here. Mm-hmm. So I play that game. I mean, to me, it adds to the fun. Where are you going to go? But, you know, here up at the top, you can see how you would come up to the stem, half cross all the way over, fill this, and then fill the cross coming all the way back, and then if you have to anchor. But, yeah, so I do – that's what I do.
I do the same thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, and that's the thing. You know, most people, I'm sure, do it that way. And then when it comes to letters – I used to close off every letter, and, you know, I was just religious about it. So I'd do the A and I'd end it off. And after a while, I just got irritated with that. So I don't always do that anymore. Especially if I know it's not going to show. If I'm on a white linen and a black thread, I know it's going to show no matter what, then I'll close every letter off. But if it's not going to show, and I found that if you can start that next stitch, if the carry is on an angle, say from the end of this T to this H up here, if you can do it on an angle, I don't find that it shows as much as if you go straight across. So for me, for letters, like if I go T and H, all right, I'm leave the A aside, because that's a problem because there's a gap and I probably would just close that off. But T and H, there's only one stitch in between. So I look at that, and it's not how am I going to stitch this. It's where do I have to end up so that I can get to the H. Mm-hmm. And then that dictates how I do this. Now, this is obvious. You would come down, do these two side stitches, come over here and do this. But then where do you jump to? Which of these do you jump to? And I would probably jump here. I would not go straight across. So I would either jump up or jump down. Because I would carry that and then do the H. But then I would do half crosses down here to end up with the H, so it would end up so that I can jump over to the C here. So I would play that game to get to the C or the E or whatever. Yeah, the E. Yeah. And then you have to decide, because of the way these letters are, do I want to come down here, then come back and over and end up here to go there? Or do I just want to close this off and start a new letter? And in this case, I'd probably start a new letter or start new over here. Mm-hmm. But it's always, where do I need to end up to be closest to the next letter so that I minimize the carry?
So what do you do about the I, the dot on the I?
I do a pin stitch and finish the cross and weave it under a couple times and pray it stays. That's two. I don't like carrying.
It's straight.
Yeah.
And it's straight.
Yep.
Yeah.
To me, there's, I don't know what you're going to do.
Right.
You know,
to me, it's only two. Now, if it's more than three, then I don't carry. But two, I would just do that. I would go up there, snap it, and go back down. But that's me, because I'm not willing to take that time to do that little dot. I don't think it's as noticeable, especially if you're using a really tight linen.
Right.
You can't really see it. I guess it depends too on the color. If you're using a white linen with black fabric, I might think about it. Yeah. If there were a whole lot of them, but one, I'm not so sure I'd mess with it.
And see, if I could go up here and not have to come back, I would consider it. But to me, that's a straight run that you got to come back. So now you've got two threads behind there.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'll just stitch that and let it sit by itself. I won't. I'll do the monkeying just so I don't have that carry. And quite frankly, in this instance here, I would probably move that dot down one because I don't know why it's sitting up there so high anyway. I would.
You certainly could.
Yeah. And you know, and then here's another one where you start out like this one has to be like stand alone, but then this branch here, you can do all these branches and come back, and you can play, you can just manipulate it all the way up and keep coming back to the center to anchor. And then and see, I would do all the branches first, and then I would know exactly where I have to put each of these leaves or whatever whatever they are. Mm-hmm. But you know, same kind of thing. And I would start at the bottom, so that I have always looking. You know, where am I going to anchor? Where am I going to anchor?
Right.
Because I'd rather anchor under a mass than a single line of stitches, especially when they're like mm-hmm. this.
Right.
So that's all I had.
Okay, good.
All right.
So there we go. Yeah. So that was fun. I don't know.
Yeah, it was fun.
Let us know what you think. I want to know how many people go up there and are going to do a single little X on that stitch and pin stitch it. And how many are going to do like Lazy Beth and go up and down and not worry about that little dot on their eye? So put a comment so I know that yep. I'm not the only lazy one. Not lazy. I just don't, I guess, for me.
Well, it's a choice. Judgment that you make. Yeah.
Right, right, right. And I mean, like if there say, were a whole bunch of them, I wouldn't want to leave a whole bunch of strings in an open area. Then I would take the time to do the pin stitches and do it small. Yes, then I would. But one little dot.
Well, I hate them. You know, I don't like it at all when it shows up. Oh, geez, really? But I'll make the thing. Oh, here's the back side of.
Oh, nice.
Of that, so pretty clean. And you, if you study it, you can. And this is why I love to see the back sides. Because is it in focus? Kind of semi. But I love to see the backsides because you can see how the stitcher moves around to get the look they want on the front. Mm-hmm. Like this,
you
this
see
goofy.
The back of my pumpkin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
It's actually kind of a hot mess.
Right. But you got a lot going on in the front, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's beads and cross stitches and.
Right.
But because I'm going all kinds of different directions in this, just like, so you can kind of see what I did the same thing over here with this light colored area uh-huh. that you were talking about.
Yeah.
I am going to put a lining on the back of this. Because I don't think the judge needs to see the back.
Yeah. Well, it's a bell pull. It probably needs one anyway, right? Is that the bell pull? Yeah.
Yeah, it is a bell pull. And I mean, they don't have to be lined, but I mean, I will line it.
Yeah.
I think that'll just make it hang better.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Besides covering up the back.
Nothing wrong with that. Yep. So.
Yep.
All right. The hour show is now an hour and a half. Excellent. We've done it.
That was fun.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yes.
I liked it.
Yeah. Good show. And like Beth said, let us know if this has been helpful or if it's like, yeah, everybody does it that way. Well, all right. Fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just reiterate this. We're not dictating anything. You do you. You do it how you want, how you enjoy it. But if something comes out of this that helps you feel like you're getting a better stitch, then bravo for that. So, yeah. All right. That's it. Let us know what you think. Thanks for listening. Bye.
All right. Bye.